Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and today's topic is serial killer William MacDonald, better known as the Mutilator, from Sydney, Australia, who terrorized Sydney between June of 1961 and April of 1963, best known for his the brutal attacks in which he would stab his victims around the neck and head area, and after killing them, would cut off their testicles and penises. So I don't know why Brandy is laughing.
Of course, the first one back has got to be a testicle slicer killer.
We like to welcome back, as you probably heard the giggles in the background when I mentioned slicing off penises. We would like to welcome back the very lovely and talented, the mistress of the macabre, the empress of evil, and Satan's dirty little secret,
the devil. And Timmy, just let me say here something. Can I say here
something? Let me introduce her first.
You just introduced
her. Brandy. Welcome back, Brandy.
Hi. I'm so happy to be back.
We're happy to have you back.
Timmy.
Yes.
How many podcasts did we do without the devil?
A couple, but let me introduce you first, okay? Because you're not officially here yet. I'm also joined by the very distinguished, the very honorable, the very dependable, most usually... the courageous Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. Now, Colonel, you may speak. How are you today? Okay, the Colonel has handed me a note that reads, Please excuse the Colonel from the podcast. He has a sore tongue, signed the Colonel's doctor.
Your herpes do not give you an excuse to not
be
that out of the way, Timmy. Let me ask you a question. How many podcasts do we do without the devil?
A few. Yeah.
A few. And what were they, Timmy?
They were
righteous, Timmy.
They were righteous.
They were righteous. They were pure.
They were pure.
And what did you do, Timmy? What did you do? She handed out that apple and you couldn't help yourself, could you? I walked into the building this morning and I hurt to my marrow, Timmy. I hurt to my marrow. You know why, Timmy?
What's Mara?
Because
what's
the Mara? Devil was in the building, Timmy.
Yeah, she's back.
She's back. We laid a whole new foundation for the History Dweebs Nation, and you let the devil back in.
What the hell is wrong with him?
I don't know, but hi, I'm so happy.
We're glad you're back, Brandy. And did you bring your gallbladder for show and tell?
I did not. I think that
we should post a picture of it on the website.
I think it's considered hazardous waste.
Oh.
That all being said, welcome back, devil.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now, what's this with you, Colonel? You can't talk?
He's got a herpy.
I bit my tongue, Timmy.
So
I was eating some food. I bit my tongue. I got a sore on my tongue.
So you're asking us to be worried? You're asking to be excused from the podcast because you bit your tongue?
I'm asking you to make a reasonable accommodation under the ADA Act of 1981.
Because he was chowing on some food.
Well, ADA Act was 1988, but... But besides
I'm
that...
I'm getting grandfathered in, Timmy.
He was chowing on some food, which clearly...
No, he was chowing on a peppermint.
A butterscotch.
I was eating a peppermint. I bit into the peppermint.
This
peppermint
was weeks ago.
Become...
herpes.
They become very sharp, and one impaled itself into my tongue. It is not a pleasant sensation.
Herpes.
So every
herpes.
Time he talks, it hurts him. So you're going to limit.
Well, it's
I
healed.
I mean, I think yeah. Everyone is okay with you limiting your.
It's healed now, but I did 3 podcasts while it hurts, so I should get one while it doesn't. I should get one off while it doesn't.
Okay, no. Colonel, you just sit down and don't say anything. We're just happy you're here.
No.
Well, I don't understand it. You know what we're doing, Timmy?
What?
I see the Facebook page. I see all those little cackling hens saying,
I love them. You leave them alone.
We're pandering, Timmy. Sure, there's a small segment of our listenership that's unhinged and...
You're talking about Team Brandy.
Team Brandy, the unhinged group that finds this woman. But, Timmy, that's a small percent. They're a small but loud minority.
I love my minority. They're wonderful. They're unhinged. Thank you for all the well wishes.
They shall now, from now ever, be known as the Cackling Hen Crew.
They're working on the.
Call them what you want.
I seen that Brittany Nicole was working on this sweatshirt for.
Oh, it wasn't Brittany Nicole. I think it was another Brittany.
No, I think it's Brittany Nicole. We'll check it out.
Yeah.
And while we're at it, I'd like to thank San Francisco Giant Nut for his nice comment on Facebook.
iTunes. Yeah.
Thank you.
We got a nice iTunes review in which I was called adequate. And I appreciate that.
You clearly are.
Yeah.
And said that occasionally there are women on the show, but they don't really seem to add any value.
But he really liked the Colonel. So, yeah.
Thank you.
A discerning listener.
Yeah, it was Brittany. Yeah, Brittany Nicole.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, so San Francisco Nut said that. He liked our show, and he gave us 4 stars, so we appreciate that. We also got some 5-star reviews that I want to mention as well from Stevers, Mike C. Dad, and Chuck the Red. So we appreciate
Chuck the Red. That sounds like a ginger Viking.
It does sound like a Viking. Maybe he is a Viking. Mm-hmm. But Chuck the Red. They gave us some good reviews, so thank you very much. Got some nice emails from a couple of folks. We appreciate Josh and, of course, the whole Team Brittany or Team Brandy. I'm guessing I don't have a Team Brittany yet. Team Brandy out there. Thank you all for listening.
Save your souls, ladies. Save your souls. Get yourself some church and go to church on Sunday and release these fine women from your grip, devil.
Yes. Yeah.
Release these fine women from your... Get behind these Satan. That's what these women should say.
They're wonderful. They're wonderful.
Yeah, well, you're...
You know what? They made me feel better when I really didn't feel very good at all. So I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
And nobody said nothing when I had a sore tongue.
Well, you got Scott. Scott is on Team Colonel. He's the only one. That's Army of One.
With friends like
he's
Scott.
He's a wolf pack of one.
It's the lone wolf.
He is a lone wolf, yeah.
But we also want to thank, all those folks who've been commenting on our page, Brittany, Nicole, as we said, Mary Ray, Marvin, Kim, Taylor, Stephanie Q, Charlie, Eric, Dwight, Tricia Hillward, and Michael Moody. Thank you all for your comments, and keep them coming. We love reading them. Colonel, you have your 2 standard shout-outs.
I got my shout-out to Lady Beverly. Lady Beverly's a courageous woman. She's always feeling a little bit under the weather, but she's doing well. So we are hoping that she is, as always, on the mend. She's very active. I follow her on Facebook. She sees a lot of movies.
Yeah, you know, she posts a lot of updates.
And she updates our Facebook page better
cool
than
stuff.
You do, I might add.
I know. She does. She put a lot of cool stuff. She keeps it updated on English history, so we appreciate that.
And our one-footed wonder, the lovely and beautiful, who you keep trying to kill.
Right.
Dottie Scott.
Quit
trying to kill your mama.
She's on the mend. She is on the mend. Okay, let's jump into...
For now.
Let's jump into William McDonald, better known as Mutilator. And let's talk about his dastardly deeds. I'm going to give you a little background on him. First of all, he had several aliases. We're going to go with William McDonald just because that is what he was known by when he committed most of his murders. But anyway, William McDonald was born Allen Ginsberg in Liverpool, England in 1924, which, of course, Colonel, Liverpool, England?
Liverpool, England is where the Beatles originated, Timmy.
Yes, exactly. So he was born there in England, 1924. I don't have his exact birth date there, so we don't know whether his mother or not was pregnant.
No, but I will tell
during
you
the holidays.
That the Colonel's granddaddy
was a
fine, fine saxophone player. And he was sometimes referred to as the fifth Beatle, Timmy.
Was he like Pete Best?
No, he used to go on the road with him, play... play the concerts.
He played with the Beatles.
Yep.
Were they aware of it?
They were not aware of it.
Okay.
But he would bring his sax to the show and play along, Timmy. That's all that matters. He was a fifth Beatle.
He was. So, well, that's interesting, Colonel. I didn't know that. He played the sax, huh? Okay.
He did.
Okay. So, McDonald's, as I said, was born in Liverpool in 1924. he was mistreated by his father. His father wanted to toughen him up and make... So he used to beat him, and he made him smoke. He made him take up smoking. Smoking will toughen you up.
Yeah, well...
Smoking will toughen... And, you know, that ain't... I mean...
I thought you're not supposed to be talking. You're not following your doctor's orders.
Well, a doctor can't tell me what to do all the time to me.
Okay.
Doctor's not the boss of him.
Okay. So anyway, his father was kind of a tough love kind of guy. He would sometimes make William sleep outside in the middle of winter, placing a plate of food for him in the backyard.
Well, then, what's the problem?
I don't know.
Apparently, Timmy, you have a different view on child rearing than me,
most people.
Mr. Ginsburg, and the devil.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just...
Because I have tossed Logan out in the backyard on a number of occasions.
Oh, poor Logan. So he made him sleep outside in the middle of the winter. He put him a plate of food out there. He would also have him stand out in just his underwear in the winter and take the hose, the garden hose, and spray water on
it. Sure. But it don't get that cold in Australia.
No, this was in England when he was...
Oh, home. Well, yeah. It gets cold there, but it don't get that cold.
He would move to Australia later on. His mother was pretty meek and kind of just went along with her husband's brutality. So she didn't really intervene on his behalf. Now, William proved to be an unusual child. He was prone to taking long walks at night by himself. And on many occasions, his mother would have to call the police and go out searching for him because I guess he would just kind of roam around and not come home. He was kept to himself. He didn't have a lot of friends. He never sought company of others and really remained friendless all of his life. He was diagnosed as a young man with having schizophrenia, which, you know, back in, the 50s, there wasn't a whole lot they could do for you. There wasn't the psych meds that they are today.
Well, I would have thought that standing him out in the wintertime and hosing him with cold water wasn't one of the treatments.
Yeah, that would have got that right out of it.
Yeah, well,
you know, kids these days are just...
They're pampered.
They're pampered.
Well, this was in the 40s. I don't know about these days, but in 1943, at the age of 19, he joined the Army. And he served in a place called Lancashire. I'm not sure where that is. I'm sure Lady Beverly knows. And he served in an air raid shelter. He was a corporal. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was a private in the and he served at an air raid
that
shelter.
That seems fitting. He is a private.
He was raped by a corporal.
Ah! I hate that for him.
Called rank on him. And the corporal raped him. And threatened him with death if he told anyone. And this seems to be where his obsession with penises comes into play.
I would think that forcible sodomy would turn you against penises.
Yeah, he's anti-penis, I think. Although he did, well, we'll get into it. At first, a young McDonald felt bad about what happened. But as time went by, he realized that he enjoyed the physical experience and believed that it was the start of his life as a homosexual. Well, you know, you have to get it.
Oh, for the love of God, man.
You have to start somewhere.
That's how it works.
Yeah. I guess if somebody would have come and shoved pizza in his face, he would have liked that for the rest of his life, too. I mean, you got to be so suggestible. Just make your own decision.
I guess. Good Lord.
But his life would bring him nothing but misery and humiliation.
Him, misery? Apparently, the way you talk has brought a lot of other people misery.
That sounds like my life. Okay,
yeah.
So being raped by the...
Crybagger.
Being raped by the despised corporal would constantly be on William's young mind throughout his life, and it would play an important role in creating the horrific events that were ahead of him. He came out of the Army in 1947. Again, he was diagnosed by psychiatrists as being sick, schizophrenic. And his brother had him committed to a mental asylum in Scotland that was really a horrible place. It was just like out of the Dark Ages. The cells were crammed full of raving lunatics. And it was freezing cold, kind of like doing these podcasts.
Pretty much like, yeah, I was just thinking,
like,
yeah.
He received shock treatments every day.
Shock treatments every day?
Every day for 6 months.
That lucky son of a bitch.
Right. Mine were only once a week.
I think he did it, but he did it on his shot on his brain, not on his junk.
Oh, they didn't do it on his junk?
Yeah, that would have been...
Because a few volts running through your junk, yeah, all that unpleasant.
Right, well, yeah, you have to get it just right.
Yeah. When you smell the skin start to smoke, that's when you got to turn it up
Well,
too
if you see the smoke coming, it's turn it down a notch. After 6 months, his mother got him out of the asylum. And
Her heart.
Yeah. As he grew older, McDonald became an active homosexual, openly soliciting men in public toilets and bars.
That's what Chuck does.
So what you're saying is, during the rape, he just laid there. He wasn't active at all.
Yeah. No.
He became active.
He was a victim then, but he figured...
He was a victim, and that is sad. No means no.
No means no, exactly, even for serial killers.
Well, I think in this case, ow means no. Ow, quit
no
that, stop
no.
that, ow.
That means no.
His obvious homosexuality made life difficult.
Oh, so he was a flamer.
And these.
He was a flaming homosexual.
Well, and this was a very conservative time in history. And, homosexuality was not...
It
was frowned upon. He moved from job to job, but as the taunts and ridicule became too much for him to cope with. He also started worrying about his own sanity. Of course, I said he had these mental health issues. He consulted a psychiatrist in 1947 about his mental condition, and he was complaining that he was being persecuted and was causing him to have illusions and strange noises.
See, there's a strange thing, phenomenon in psychiatry to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Kiplinger's rule.
Okay.
Kiplinger's paradox. That if
is this the thing with the cat?
If you question your own sanity, you're not insane.
Yeah. Well...
Not the thing with the cat.
No, that's Schrodinger's cat.
Okay. I watch Big Bang. I know.
At his psychiatrist's recommendation, he spent 3 months in a mental institution again, but it changed nothing. Disillusioned and convinced that his surroundings were to blame for his unstable mental condition... William immigrated to Canada in 1949 and then on to Australia in 1955.
He was an immigrant. Those lucky bastards got him.
Yeah, he moved over to Canada and then over to Australia, and he changed his name from then Allen Ginsberg to William McDonald. He had a new name, a new home, but the old habits were, die hard. And he was shortly upon arrival, he was charged with indecent assault as he touched a detective on the penis in a public toilet.
Where else would you touch a detective in
a
public toilet?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to...
I mean, he did have it out.
He did have it. He was asking
he
for
was
it.
Asking
he
for
was
it.
Asking
had
for it.
Had on that uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Well, McDonald got placed on 2 years probation for his little... for filling up the detective.
Filling up the detective?
Whatever.
With what?
Whatever.
Gross.
He then was... and he moved to Sydney. But... He was working on a construction site, but his co-workers were picking on him and calling him names, teasing him about his sexuality. You know how construction workers can be.
I would think that you would find another field, maybe working in a floral shop or something like that, decorator. I don't know, but
he retaliated by taking a very sharp knife and slashing the tires of their bicycles. See, I just don't see construction workers riding bicycles.
But you know what? They're lucky. That's all he slashed.
They got off pretty easy.
Well, tires are a gateway drug to me.
I've heard that.
Yeah, you slice a tire.
And then it moves
first
on.
First it's a tire.
Forward, yeah. First it's a tire.
And then it's a testicle.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Hey.
He held jobs only until the taunts became too strong, and then he would move on from kind of state to state. And he had this urge, to kill his tormentors.
Urge to purge.
Yeah. Whether he was just really people are really doing that or he was just paranoid, the longer he went and people were making people were making fun of him behind his back, and again he couldn't get over this. He kept thinking people knew that about him being raped, so he had this shame.
Well, probably from the way he sat down all the time, it's like, oh,
maybe.
Wow,
I need a cushion booth, please.
I thought he wasn't supposed to be talking.
It never lasts.
So let's get to his dastardly deeds, shall we?
Devil.
Nope.
This started in Brisbane, the capital of Northern Australia. In 1960, he befriended a 55-year-old gentleman by the name of Amos Hurst.
Amos.
Amos.
No good ever comes from being pals with Amos.
Amos was a derelict.
But it sounds like Amos.
You know, his victims tended to be derelicts or vagrants.
So do our listeners.
That's not true. So, I wonder if he would be at the hobo convention.
He may be.
You know, apologize, that, listeners. Yeah, only a few of you are derelicts.
Right.
Because, you know, Carl Azaran, he got raped by a bunch of hobos.
He did. Yeah. Ain't nothing worse than a hobo raping.
Gang banged by a hobo. Because they're not very clean.
No, they're not clean. And, you know, that hobos are not known for foreplay.
They are not. They're not known for using a lot of lube. Because they don't have lube. They can't afford it.
I think they're greasy to begin with.
Stop. This is horrible.
We'd like to apologize to any hobos who might be listening.
You greasy raping bastards.
So, anyway, McDonald and Mr. Hurst started a long drinking session together in a nearby hotel, and then they went back to Hurst's hotel room where they sat on his bed and drank beer. The aging alcoholic, Hurst, was so drunk that he probably had no idea that McDonald was strangling him until it was too late.
I hate that.
That's when shit goes wrong.
He thought
it was rough hobo sex.
Hey, that's one too many drinks.
When your date takes a left and you don't even know.
Yeah. Later, McDonald would claim that he had no intentions of murdering Hurst when they went back to his room, but the urge to kill him just came on all of a sudden. And he had to squeeze his hand really tight around Hurst's neck to kill him. As he was being strangled, Amos Hurst hemorrhaged and blood spurted out of his mouth all over McDonald's.
Oh, that nasty son of a bitch hobo.
Right.
Couldn't just die like a decent
folk. And you know what? That's how you don't get your deposit back on shit. That's how
McDonald
the hotel gets pissy about stuff.
Yeah.
McDonald did not handle the blood squirting on him very well. He started punching Hurst in the face. And Hurst fell on the floor dead.
Will you be pissed off too? Somebody spitting blood all over you? You're just trying to
choke him.
Yeah, I mean, you just choke a man out. It ain't like you're shooting him or nothing. You're trying to do it without the blood. That's the whole point of the choking.
Well, he falls on the floor. Hurst falls on the floor and he's dead. Then McDonald then undresses Hurst, puts him in the bed.
Nobody will know.
He washed the blood from his arms and hands, quietly left the building, and returned to his apartment. Terrified that any minute there would be a knock on his door from the police, McDonald looked in the papers every day for the story of the murder of Amos Hurst, but no story appeared.
He didn't bang the corpse.
Because he was a hobo.
5 days later, he found Hurst's name in the obituary column, and he really couldn't believe his eyes because it said that the old man had died of a heart attack. So he got away with one. What the papers did not say was that why Amos Hurst's post-mortem showed that he had died of a heart attack. It also revealed that from severe bruising on the neck, that there was a possibility of death by strangulation. So he got away with one there.
When you have a heart attack, does blood spurt from your eyes?
I have not seen that.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, I'm not a medic, but
I know Dr. Quinn, but I'm just saying.
I've not even played one on the radio.
I think they probably just figured,
he was a hobo.
Nobody cared. No one cared. Yeah, that's probably what it was. I care, of course, but
I know. You enjoy the underdog.
The only good hobo is a dead hobo.
Yeah. I'm just adequate. Unaware of his close scrape with retribution, McDonald went to his newfound career as a murderer and added enthusiasm and bought a knife and went looking around at wine bars. I guess I don't know what wine bar is, but.
A wino bar?
No, wine bars.
I think it's a wino bar.
Okay. Sleazy hotels.
It's where you pick up the gays.
In Brisbane to find his next victim. They were full of down and outs. So that's the
way. Gays just don't go to a pub.
No, I don't even think he was looking for gays, really. He just looked for anyone he could kill.
Well, you wasn't going to get many straight guys to come back to your room with you.
That's true.
That's true. That's true. So anyway, he moved to, in 1961, he moved to Sydney. He found accommodations in East Sydney. And it's where he became known around the parks and public toilets of
as George Michael.
meaning place, you know, as a he became known as someone that you could meet and hook up with.
I'll tell you what, I'll tell you something, Timmy. I go to the airport, I go to a public place, McDonald's, whatnot, the bus station. I don't get on buses much, but sure. Anywhere there's a public toilet. And a colonel has a standard protocol. I unzip my drawers. Uh-huh. I point it and look straight forward. Uh-huh. I do not move my feet. And then I zip them back, and I wash my hands.
Okay.
See, because apparently there's all kinds of crazy little signals you can give off.
Well, here's the thing. You know what's creepy? If you're a guy, you go into a public restroom, and you go into a stall, and there are like 50 urinals.
What happened to the trough?
I like the trough.
You know they still have that, or I think they still have that.
You need the trough. And,
they have a great American Wrigley, ballpark, don't they?
No, Wrigley Field has a trough. But anyway.
Everybody, you guys are just getting way too uppity with your own individual little things.
Well, you know,
just,
but I'm saying.
You guys pee outside. But you guys will piss on a tree or a car tire or whatever else. Hold on. You guys will piss anywhere, and you want to get all uppity about everybody needs their own individual stuff. If we're out in public.
I don't mind.
Yeah. I'm peeing right now.
I'm peeing right now,
But if you're out in public, then everybody gets their own individual urinal.
You know why? Because
you need a trough.
If you tap foot or something, it means something.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you go, what's creepy is when you go into a public restroom.
Don't wash your hands in that, though.
And there's 50 urinals in there, and no one's in there but you, and you go and you get one, and then someone walks in, they get the urinal.
The one right beside you.
Yes.
Oh, my God. They do that in women's rooms.
It's creepy.
Don't get the one right beside you. There's 85 toilets in here.
Yeah.
Get the one furthest down, and there's no talking.
Yeah.
There's no chit-chat. I don't know you.
Yeah. Even if you did, there should not be no chit-chat.
See, but here's my thing. When you got your junk in your hand and you're unloading urine,
yeah,
you should have your head focused, not on... Don't turn sideways, because what happens with men is they can't just move the head sideways. They gotta move the body sideways.
It's like when you're driving.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden the colonel got pee on my alligator boots.
On your alligator boots.
It don't work on the alligator boots. It's hard to clean pee off your alligator boots.
No, you can't.
So on June 4th, 1961, which was of course just less than 1 month after I was born.
Clearly.
Police were summoned to...
Your mama was pregnant during the holidays.
Yes, she was. Police was summoned...
And during this time.
Yeah.
To... No, because she just had me on in May. This was June of 1961.
Would you people focus?
She just had you in May?
Yeah, May 9th.
Of 1961?
Yeah.
Oh, so she wasn't getting busy.
No. Police were summoned to the Sydney Domain Bath, where a man's nude corpse was found... Savagely stabbed.
What?
By him over 30 times.
Ah.
And his genitalia completely severed from his body.
What? Well, gotta stop that, Timmy. That ain't even right to talk about.
His genitalia was completely severed from his body.
I know a lot of men whose genitalia lives outside their body.
Have you ever noticed that when you say the genitalia was mangled, destroyed, crushed, whatever, if there's a man in the room, he'll... Look at me right now. I got my hands over my genitalia.
You always have your hand over your genitalia. Mm. You always are cupping your junk. That's, I don't know what your deal is.
So, Lloyd's of London makes me cover it up all the time.
Alfred Greenfield became the second victim claimed by the killer, soon to be dubbed the Sydney Mutilator. And that's, of course, Mr. McDonald.
Bum, bum, bum.
Why it wasn't long before the voices in McDonald's heads were back, urging him to kill... And on the night of Saturday, June the 4th, we just talked about, his career as a mutilator began when he struck up a conversation with Mr. Alfred Reginald Greenfield, 41-year-old vagrant.
Wasn't that Batman's butler?
That's a pretty uppity name for a hobo.
Vagrant, yeah.
I think it's Batman's butler.
He was sitting on a bench in Green Park opposite St. Vincent's Hospital in the inner city of Sydney. McDonald offered Greenfield, who was homeless at the time, and an unemployed blacksmith. Aren't you really an unemployed whatever? If you're unemployed, you're unemployed, right?
Yeah.
I'm an unemployed physicist, right? I mean...
I'm an unemployed brain surgeon.
Right, exactly. A drink from his bottle. He offered him some booze, and they went to the nearby baths on the pretext that he had some more bottles in the bag. So he said, you know, come to the bath, to this bath, public bath, and I'll give you some booze. But in the bag was more beer, but there was also his blade.
His blade.
So McDonald brought out his brand new long-bladed razor-sharp knife especially for the occasion.
Huh.
So,
as a blacksmith, this guy would have recognized that.
he should have, right. There was a lot of different corners and hideaways in that
Was his knife called the Tallywhacker 2000?
The Tallywhacker Whacker.
The Tallywhacker 2000. It'll cut through cans. It'll cut through tomatoes.
That's
it'll
right.
cut through
jam. Just like this.
Yeah, it slices. It dices. Anyway, McDonald and Greenfield chatted away as they shared another bottle of beer for a half an hour. And then the need to kill Greenfield had now become just overwhelming for McDonald. He could no longer control his urge to kill him, and the man had already drunk all the beer. So at least he drunk all the beer, and he fell asleep on the grass. So the man drinks, he passed out on the grass, okay?
So he really wasn't bothering him at that
point. So McDonald took out his knife, and he brought it down swiftly and buried the blade deep into the victim's neck.
That hurt.
He lifted and plunged the knife again and again and again until Alfred Greenfield laid still.
When he already laid still, he was passed out.
The attack severed the arteries in Greenfield's neck.
I would say.
I would think so. He had a lot of arteries.
Blood was everywhere.
That happens.
But the killer had come prepared this time. McDonald had brought a light plastic raincoat in his bag.
Oh, yeah.
And he put it on before...
Is Dexter based off of this?
Yeah.
He put it on before the attacking the unsuspecting Greenfield. So I don't know what Greenfield was expecting when he put on this raincoat, but... apparently it probably didn't set off any alarms, but he put on his, if someone puts a raincoat on, you're going to be, you should be,
it
should
raise his question. How long are they alone?
I just think it's
going
to be some wild sex. I get a woman to put a raincoat on, I just think things are looking up.
So they're in this alley drinking.
No, they're in this bath.
So they're in a bath drinking. This guy passes out, and they're still alone. And so old boy has time to put on a raincoat.
No, actually put it on before the guy passed out, and he just didn't question it.
Well, because why would you? Why would you question putting on a raincoat?
Hey, if you're an alcoholic and a man's got me a beer, you're not going to ask.
Why would you question him putting on a raincoat in a bath?
I don't know that you're going to find a lot of excellent deductive qualities in hobos.
Anyway, after killing... Mr. Greenfield, the mutilator removed his trousers and underpants, lifted the testicles and penises. There's only
just
one.
I was going to say, that'd be not sure. Should have kept.
He lifted his testicles and penis, and he sliced them off at the scrotum with his knife.
So do you know what he's doing with them? I mean, is he keeping them? Is he feeding them to his dog?
Yeah, I'm going to get that.
Okay.
The mutilator then threw Alfred Greenfield's genitals into Sydney Harbor.
So he's just taking them out of spite. out of spite.
He wrapped the knife in his raincoat, put the raincoat in his bag, and walked home.
He's not even making no genitalia lampshades or nothing.
Nothing. I mean, you know what? At least put that shit in some formaldehyde and put it up on a shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
In the following days, he kept reading the newspaper to get details. He kind of liked... kind of like reading about his own dastardly deeds in the paper.
He started believing his own press.
It appeared in the paper this time. This time they did not, misdiagnose. It was obviously that the man was...
It was clear that they had chopped off his junk.
And they had stabbed him in the neck, yeah. The papers called it a work of a maniac, and they dubbed him the mutilator. So he's got a name now. So the press was not allowed to print to the full extent of Alfred Greenfield's injuries.
Because you can't use penis in the paper.
Well, you can, apparently. But the rumors spread like wildfire. You know how wildfire is.
Wildfire spreads fast.
Yeah.
Like chlamydia in a hobo camp.
The herpes in Chuck's mouth.
Oh,
that's wrong.
That is wrong, man. The press did say that Greenfield... had been violently stabbed at least 30 times, and certain parts, air quotes there, of his anatomy were found in the harbor.
They found it?
They found it. Yeah.
They fished it out of the river?
Yeah, and
Jesus, what kind of pecker did this guy have?
Apparently he had wrapped it up, and they found it. They were looking
squirrels
for that.
Squirrels were riding it up the river?
They were, like the police divers found it. They were looking for the murder weapon, but they come up with a penis instead. So, you go looking for a murder weapon, you find a penis instead.
happens to me all the time.
The police didn't really have a slightest motive why anyone would want to kill the poor Mr. Greenfield, who was, they, as far as they were concerned, was a harmless vagrant, let alone cut off his genitals and throw him in a harbor.
Well, is there really such thing, though, as
harmless vagrant?
Harmless vagrant.
Well, apparently.
I don't think so.
Police thought so.
I'm not I'm opposed to vagrants.
Well, the police thought it might have been a, they thought they would solve the problem because it was so, you know, it was so brutal that they thought it was a crime of passion. And eventually,
well, I would think, yeah.
Eventually a woman would come forward to, you know, to claim what, you know, to fear of her life. But
we are some junk ripper offers.
Yeah, but no one came forward, and even though the police conducted a extensive investigation, and they couldn't find no clues to kill Greenfield. They did offer a £1,000 reward, which is around $2,000, for information leading to the killer's arrest. A couple of months later, Sydney had all but forgotten about the mutilator. Things cooled down, and the police wrapped up their investigation of the murder of Mr. Greenfield, and he became just another unsolved crime. But when another derelict turned up dead 6 months later with very similar injuries, police knew that they had a serial killer on the loose.
You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a dead derelict.
I was going to say, I bet the workers' comp rate is high to be a derelict.
I don't know, but I feel bad for the derelicts. I mean, first of all, you're a derelict. I mean, that sucks. And then people run around cutting off your penis.
So. I know. Well, but the women are safe, so you're all right. We're all right there.
It's not easy being a. It's not easy being a derelict.
Yeah. A dickless derelict.
Yeah, there's nothing worse. Now McDonald changed his name again. Motherfucker changes his name a lot. To Alan Brennan. And he was working as a postal clerk. So now he's going postal on people.
There you go.
On the morning of Saturday, November 21st, 1961, which, Colonel, you know, is just a couple years and a couple of days before the Kennedy assassination.
Jesus Christ.
It's right, not long before the Cuban Missile Crisis.
About a month later.
Mm-hmm.
Cuban Missile Crisis was in 62, so it was about a year before. November 21st, 1961, William McDonald purchased a knife with a 6-inch blade from Mick Simmons Sports Store. I know you go in there a lot, Colonel.
Yeah, but what happened to the original?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Did you want Tallywhacker 2000?
I don't know. I think he probably ditched it.
Well, it got dull. I mean, you can only hack so much before it gets dull. It's not a Ginsu knife, for Christ's sake.
You chop one penis, I think that thing's pretty much done.
Well, I guess they didn't have cable TV back then where you could get the QVC.
It all depends on how tough that penis is.
Well, yeah, you get a leathery scrotum.
And you know derelicts have leathery scrotums.
Well,
I mean, 9 out of 10.
You got to get the old hobos so the balls hang down real good and you can get a good hold on them.
Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah.
God.
That's disgraceful. Anyway, when he bought this knife at the Mick Simmons Sports Store, he told the guy behind the counter he was going fishing. But what he really wanted to do was to commit murder again. He was getting those urges to kill.
Da, da, da.
Da, da, da. They become stronger than ever. So That night, November 21st, 1961, McDonald was walking down the street in East Sydney when he saw 41-year-old Ernest William
Bass? Ernest T. Bass?
Ernest William Coben.
That sucks.
Staggering toward him. McDonald lured Coben into a nearby nearby Moore Park where they sat in the public toilets and drank beer.
Oh, that's just no place that can't be to drink. Hygienic.
No place better to drink than a public
toilet. Why are you going to sit your beer down in a public
toilet? Well, you don't want to get a public, you know, you don't want to get caught for drinking in public. So anyway, Coben made no comment when his friend put on a raincoat from his bag.
Why would you?
He was sitting on a toilet, Coben was drinking, when the first blow from the knife struck his throat, severing his jugular vein. The mutilator had brought the knife up in a sweeping motion, the same way that a fighter delivers an uppercut. And it was, and it had its desired effect. Ernest Coben's blood sprayed everywhere, all over the mutilator's arm, face, and raincoat. And those raincoats come in handy.
They do.
Severely injured and most likely in shock, Coben instinctively...
I guess!
Coben instinctively lifted his hand up to defend himself as the mutilator kept stabbing repeatedly, wounding him on the arms, neck, face, and chest.
Well, you gotta really stab repeatedly to be a mutilator. You're just a slasher.
Yeah. Everybody knows that.
That's true. Even when Ernest Coben fell stone dead from the toilet seat, the mutilator kept up his frenzy attack until blood was splattered all over the toilet cubicle.
Yes.
The mutilator then pulled down Ernest Coben's pants
and
underwear down to the knees, lifted his penis and testicles, sliced them off with a knife, and put them in a plastic bag that he had brought with him. When he finished, the mutilator calmly took off his raincoat, wrapped the knife and the plastic bag in it, put them in his bag, and walked down out of the toilet. He stopped along the way and washed his hands under a tap.
Well, yeah.
Back at his lodging, the mutilator washed the bloody contents of the bag in warm water, put them in another plastic bag, and took them to bed with him.
What?
So he sleeps.
So he kept this pecker.
He slept.
This pecker's a keeper.
He's sleeping with junk?
Mm-hmm. Well, just for momentarily. The following day, the mutilator.
Doesn't matter.
Well, he was tired. It was a long day.
You sleep with junk one time, and you're a junk sleeper.
The following day, the mutilator wrapped a plastic bag in this and its grisly contents, the knife and a brick in the newspaper, tied them to a string, and threw them into Sydney Harbor, into the deepest part. This time, there would be no evidence left lying around for the police to find.
I will bet there's a bunch of great white sharks hanging around Sydney Harbor every time he comes up.
Like, waiting for a pecker. Waiting for someone to toss them a
it's
pecker.
It's testicle stew day.
The headlines in the newspaper the next day blaze, mutilator strikes again. The police received a phone call at 5:30 a.m. and a man with a hoarse voice said, "There's a murdered man in a toilet in Moore Park, opposite of the Bat and Ball Hotel." They go to the Bat and Ball Hotel. That's a fucking nice hotel. That's 5 stars.
But you know what? Not for that guy.
Bat and Ball Hotel, man. That's nice.
I like your impression. That was sweet.
The guy hung up. I should have had Colonel do his, He's disabled.
He is disabled. The herps will get you.
The horror that
the what?
The horror that the police confronted was unimaginable.
A bloody stall is pretty nasty.
Ernest Coben had been stabbed about 50 times. His private parts were completely missing. They had been sliced off as if by a surgeon. So the guy's got some skills. The toilet was washed.
By now, he didn't have practice.
The toilet was washed with blood. In the minds of Sydney's toughest detectives, there's no doubt that if anyone had walked in on a mutilator as he went about his business, they too would have been stabbed to death. Well, fucking A.
Right. You don't just walk in on somebody like that when they're doing their stuff.
A madman was on the loose. No one was safe. Again, the police could not find a clue other than a missing penis. There were no fingerprints, not even on a beer bottle. So... no luck. So the mutilator had wiped everything clean. So he's he's pretty hygienic, our mutilator friend. No one had seen anything. The victim that he killed was married with two children and had been living in the inner Sydney Harbour area with
his
family.
So he wasn't a vagrant.
Well, he was vagrant. He was a married vagrant, but I don't know. Hey, if you walk down, if you're walking in a park and someone shows you a bottle and you don't talk to him, you just start drinking it. You're a vagrant in my
opinion. I think you're a vagrant.
I think that classifies you as a vagrant.
Maybe he was just desperate.
But outside of his mysterious assassin, assailant, Mr. Coben didn't have any enemies at all. He had no enemy in the world. Police started staking out public toilets and known derelict haunts.
George Michael's places.
Yeah.
Because you know derelicts have
the
haunts.
Bat and Ball.
Bat and Ball Motel. Undercover police disguised as vagrants, mixed in with the down and outs. Yeah, but you know, they always had the nicer shoes.
Well, that's true. You can always tell a vagrant by his shoes.
Yeah, because, you know, you can look like a vagrant, but if you got Nikes on, you got Jordans on, yeah, they know.
It's like the hookers, Timmy.
Yeah.
If they're pretty, the police.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They have all their teeth.
If they have all their teeth, they're policemen.
But anyway, their efforts were fruitless. They did not catch the mutilator.
As the part is the longest part in the world.
I know, it is long. I'm sorry.
We're like an hour into this.
Well, he had a lot. He was a busy man. There's a lot of junk out there to cut off. Why am I saying it? As the months passed, police...
Did it take him this long to cut the junk off?
As the months passed, police were no closer to catching a mutilator than they were after the Alfred Greenfield murder. They just waited for him to strike again.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? For his part, McDonald would read every newspaper to kind of read the stories about himself. He kind of was fascinated about, and he read it like he was reading like someone else's story. Like he would read it like as an observer, you know, just kind of interested in the story. He would even join his workmates in discussing who the mysterious mutilator could be. So he was a little sly little fox. McDonald would secretly get upset when his co-workers referred to the mystery murderer as a queer or sexual deviant. It's not politically correct for them to say that.
Well, no, not queer. And they could have used that. Yeah.
Well, this was 1950, so it was the vernacular of the time.
I don't even know that word that you just said.
So for a time, McDonald thought his workmates... suspected him of being the mutilator, of all people.
What a nerve of those bastards.
Was he taken aback?
But it was only his paranoia. So he was, you know, like, telltale heart. He was everything, you know, he was thinking people were looking at him. And he had thought about giving himself up to the police. It crossed his mind, but he enjoyed killing too much.
Sure.
Because once you turn yourself in, party's over.
Well, they make you stop.
Oh, you got to kill in jail.
Yeah.
You can kill in jail.
Yeah, I guess.
Then they put you in solitary.
Yeah, and then all you can kill is yourself. As months went by, the urge to kill became overwhelming. On the morning of Saturday, March 31st, 1962, which is probably around Easter time.
Probably, yes.
McDonald purchased another long-blade knife, a razor-sharp knife, from Mick Simmons' sports store.
He keeps going back there. Do these people not catch on to anything?
He packed it in his bag with his raincoat. It was raining slightly, so it was a good idea. He had his rainbow coat on that night. It was around 10 a.m. He left the Oxford Hotel and followed a man by the name of Frank Gladstone McLean down the street, and he passed a police station. McDonald struck up a conversation with the drunken McLean and suggested that they go to Brook Lane, which is a little side street, and have a drink. He was very sociable. You got to admit, he was a sociable guy.
Yeah.
They rounded an unlit corner, and the mutilator plunged his knife into McLean's throat.
He didn't even wait.
He didn't even let him drink.
There was no foreplay this time.
No, he just plunged his knife right into McLean's throat. And this was right around the corner from the police station, too. McLean was a tall...
Well, by this time, he had gotten a lot of balls.
Yeah, McLean was a tall man, a tall, thin man, well over 6 foot tall, and could have made mincemeat out of the much smaller McLean had he not struck him in the throat with a knife.
Well, yeah, that's a definite disadvantage in a fight, yeah.
Yeah, the advantage just starts to sway your way once you do that. McLean felt the knife sink deep into his throat, As he started to resist, the mutilator stabbed him again in the face. And as McClane fell, trying to protect himself, the mutilator punched him in the face, forcing him to off balance. He fell to the ground. The mutilator got on top of him and stabbed him in the head, neck, throat, face, and chest until Jesus. He was dead.
Yeah.
Saturated.
Pretty much did what he did to the other people.
Yes. Yeah. He's a one, you know, he's a...
One-trick pony.
Yeah, really is. So... Saturated in Frank McClane's blood, the mutilator dragged the body a few yards through the bushes, lowered his victim's trousers, and taking his knife out, he sliced the bottom of Mr. McClane's testicles, sliced off his entire...
Can we from now on just say did the deed, okay? The deed.
Whacked his junk off.
Yeah.
He whacked his tallywhacker. For the first time, the mutilator was frightened that he was going to be caught because... He committed the act not very far from a police station and also from a very busy street, Burke Street in Sydney. He put the genitals in a plastic bag, and he was really worried that someone saw him because he heard a baby crying and voices nearby, so he was afraid that someone saw him. So he was getting really paranoid at this time, and he thought that a police car was going to pull up on him any minute.
Guy must go through raincoats like I don't wear.
Yeah. But his luck held out. He was able to make it home.
With his Ziploc bag.
With his Ziploc bag.
Did he sleep with it?
He passed several people on the street, but no one paid him attention. And he was now, for the fourth time now, he escaped as if he was invisible. Back in his room, the mutilator washed the contents of his plastic bag in the sink. So he took the dick out and washed the dick and balls. Put them in a clean plastic bag, and in the morning he threw them off the Sydney Harbour.
Well, yeah, because you want to make sure that shit's nice and clean before you toss it.
Yeah, you don't want to be tossing dirty hobo junk into the harbor.
No, that's crazy.
Yeah,
the police organized their hunt for the mutilator at the time of Frank McLean's death, and they were out searching for this guy when it happened. Within minutes, there were 30 detectives at the murder scene, so they were on it this time.
They were on it this time. Yeah.
These murders were unprecedented in Australian history. Police could not recall more violent or sickening crime.
Because they were all men and there was no junk.
Well, yeah.
One theory was that the murderer was a deranged surgeon, I guess because he used surgeon-like precision in removing the penis and testicles.
Okay, did the deed. That's all you got to say.
The removal of Frank McLean's genitals had been done with a scalpel by... with someone who had, it looked like someone had years of surgical experience, the expert says.
Well, I suppose it's better than using like a, you know,
what's that? A bloody knife?
Yeah, a rusty can lid or something.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Which is how they could have taken out my gallbladder. I would have let them.
Police sought the advice of clairvoyants to try to figure this thing out, but no, they're to no avail.
Miss Cleo could not help them.
Miss Cleo could not. But they brought in a clairvoyant named Rosaline Norton, who claimed to have touched with the mutilator. She had chats with the devil every day. But
I've never talked to her.
I've never run into her in your support group or whatever it is. You're socializing.
But apparently she was a notorious
liar.
Liar. Notorious clairvoyant. But police investigated her leads, but they led to nothing, of course. So a special police task force was set up to track down the killer who was causing them so much embarrassment. The police are getting embarrassed at this point. This guy's going around taking off people's dicks, and they can't stop him.
Well, how you think the hobos felt?
Right.
Ridiculous hobos weren't all that happy either.
Teams of detectives work around the clock, checking out every possible lead.
They were searching for tips.
Nice.
Oh, my God. I thought you wasn't allowed to talk. The police phones ran hot. There were a lot of people calling in, you know, reporting.
Was there junk sightings?
Yeah, they were. Night shelters and hostels were checked and double-checked. Nothing they could find. By now, the police had a dossier on the mutilator. It was inches thick.
Was it 6 inches thick?
I don't know. So they suspected an American soldier who had been charged with the murder of a 13-year-old boy in Germany who was also kind of was mutilated. But that lead proved to be fruitless. So they were really at a standstill who was behind this. The reward was upped, increased to 5,000 pounds or $10,000, which was a staggering amount for the 1960s. On April 14th, a young man, Patrick Rowan, informed police that he had been attacked by a mutilator in on a street nearby Sydney Park, not far from where Frank McLean was murdered. Ryan said that his attacker scaled a high fence and lunged at him with a long blade, but missed, nicking him only slightly. He said the mysterious assailant was hissing at him as he attacked. He described the man as being tall and solid and of foreign descent, between the age of 30 and 40, wearing a light-collared suit. Unfortunately, nothing came of this as they discovered Ryan was an alcoholic undergoing psychiatric treatment.
He could still be telling the truth. This seems to, you know,
and cut himself and had cut himself and made the story up to get a bit of attention. An unsympathetic judge gave him 18 months in prison.
God.
That's not nice.
All right.
All right. In the meantime, things were not going quite so well for Mr. McDonald in his private life.
Well, they were going less well for the guy who got 18 months for chopping off his own packer.
Well, clearly.
Nah, his penis wasn't chopped off.
He just cut himself.
He cut himself.
He's a cutter. In totally unrelated incidents.
Maybe been shaving.
Well, he could have been. He had a severe falling out with his landlord, and in the same week, he got fired from his mail sorting job at the Postal Department.
How do you get fired from the post office?
I don't know.
Oh, this isn't awesome.
But he'd saved a lot of money over the years, not on raincoats, Jesus Christ.
Oh, no. Nice.
And he decided to go into business for himself as a butcher.
Wow. There you go.
Well, there you go. He's got a skill, life skill.
Yeah, he's got the appropriate skills,
yes.
Transferable skills.
Still using the assumed name of Alan Edward Brennan, he paid £560 or $1,120 for a business in Burwood, an inner western suburb of Sydney.
So he's starting his own business.
In his little shop, he made sandwiches. Okay. It's like a Subway.
Yeah.
And he sold a variety of small goods. The shop was also an agency for a dry cleaning company.
Well, which came in handy for him.
Yeah, especially his raincoats.
Raincoats,
can
right.
Can you get the blood out of my jeez. Socks, please?
Did they sell penis sandwiches there?
Yeah. They might have. That would have been the perfect cover. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. With the salami, just have it all. Yeah. So the urges to murder and mutilate came again stronger than ever before. And one night early in November of 1962, he went to a wine saloon.
Right.
Called the Wine Palace.
What if they had those swinging doors?
A fancy one.
I don't know. Well, clearly a fancy one. And it was opposite the People's Palace in Pitt Street in the heart of downtown Sydney.
Right in the heart.
Right. He was looking for a victim. So he met 42-year-old James Hackett, who is a petty thief and a derelict.
Oh, yeah.
Do they have meetings, the derelict?
Yeah. If they had, they would have been warned about this guy.
Was he a card-carrying derelict or just a...
I think he was just... He was non-union.
A wildcat. He was a wildcat.
He was. But he'd only been out of jail for a couple of weeks, so...
He was making his bones as a derelict.
Yeah. So McDonald took Hackett back to his new residence.
I just love the name. His name is Hackett.
Yeah. And they continued drinking until Hackett passed out on the floor. The mutilator then used a knife from his delicatessen to stab the sleeping Hackett. On the first plunge, the long knife went straight through Hackett's neck, but incredibly, Hackett woke up and shielded the next blow with his arm, thus diverting the knife into the mutilator's other hand, cutting it badly.
You're like a ninja derelict.
Sort of. With blood pouring from the wound on his hand, the mutilator unleashed renewed homicidal rage on Hackett.
Well, yeah, he cut now.
He brought the knife down with both hands and plunged it through Hackett's heart, killing him instantly.
Yeah, I don't.
The floor was awash with blood, but still the mutilator attacked Hackett's body with the knife until he had to stop for breath. He sat in the pools of blood beside the body, puffing and panting. There was blood everywhere. It was splattered all over the walls, all over the ceilings. It collected in big puddles on the floor. He bandaged his hand with a dirty dishcloth.
That's not hygienic.
Nope. No. Well, and then he decided, okay, so now...
Like,
yes, and now he's going to remove this guy's nuts.
Yeah.
But the knife was now blunt and bent, so he was too exhausted to go down and get another one.
I mean, it's not easy being a mutilator.
It's really not. It's exhausting. So he just sat there, covered head to foot in blood, hacking away at this guy's scrotum with the blunt knife. Can you just see him just sitting there,
Worst nightmare.
Slumped over in the corner, just kind of half-ass hacking at him? Just Damn it!
Come on. The shredder, not the mutilator.
Yeah, so he stabbed the penis a few times. Yeah, and then made some cuts around the testicles before finally, you know what, done. He just gave up and fell asleep.
Need a good pair of scissors.
He fell asleep where he sat. Well, so he's next to this half-naked, bloody, nasty guy.
With his dick hanging off.
With his dick half off. And he falls asleep. So in the morning, he woke up to find himself covered in the sticky, drying blood and lying next to the victim.
Right.
The pools of blood had soaked through the floorboards and threatened to drip into the counters of his shop.
You see, that's why you should always clean up immediately after mutilation.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Well, yeah, clearly. I mean, how whatever.
That's a mutilated man.
How tired do you have to be to just be like, fuck it, I'm going to sleep. Yeah. I just can't.
That's a lot of chopping.
This dick just ain't going to come off.
It's just not. I just cannot do it. So the mutilator had a bath, cleaned himself up, went to the hospital where he had some stitches put in his hand.
See, I would have made that a priority the night before taking my nap.
But he's got the cover. He's got the perfect cover for it because he said he cut it at his shop.
Yeah.
And then it took him the rest of the day to clean up the mess upstairs. The huge pools of blood on the linoleum couldn't be scrubbed out, so he had to tear that up, break it into bits, throw it out.
Could have had asbestos in it, too.
You already know.
That's dangerous work.
So he also removed all of Hackett's bloody clothing, leaving only the socks.
You don't want to get his feet cold.
No, that's ridiculous. He then dragged the dead and naked Hackett underneath his shop and left him there. Every few hours, he went back to the body and dragged it a little further into the foundations of the building until it was jammed into a remote corner of the brickwork, out of view and almost impossible to see. McDonald left all of his bloody clothing with the corpse. He panicked when he finally sat down and thought about what he'd done. He thought the police would come looking for Hackett. Only a few of the bloodstains had come off the walls, and there was blood all over the floorboards.
You know, for someone going around cutting people's dicks off, he's not very cool about it.
He wasn't a good planner.
No,
not a lot of foresight there. If the police,
a lot of foreskin.
Well, yeah. If the police even came to ask him questions, he'd be screwed. And then there was the cab driver who drove them to the shop the night of the murder. He would remember them. Why? So paranoid and terrified, McDonald packed his bags and caught a train to Brisbane, where he moved into a boarding house, dyed his graying hair black, grew a mustache, and assumed the name of Alan McDonald. Every day, he bought the Sydney newspaper expecting to read about the murder of Hackett and how the police were looking for a man named Brennan in connection with the mutilator murders. As the days turned into weeks and months, there was no mention of anybody or any search for the missing Brennan. McDonald was beside himself with worry. Had police found the body and set a trap for him? Would they knock on his door any minute? The mystery of it was maddening.
Well, he doesn't have, you know, the guy is a little anxious, too anxious to be a mutilator. Well, if you're worried about, you know, if you're a little, you know, you're worrying about it all the time, a cop busting you, then don't go in that business. Don't go around cutting people's dicks off, and you don't have to worry about it. I just think he's a little bit too anxious to be in that line of work.
Well, he is. You have to be cooler than that. However, he didn't have to worry about it.
Why?
Well, because he'd been declared dead.
He had.
And nobody was looking for it. So a couple days after McDonald left for Brisbane, customers wanting to pick up their dry cleaning at the deli.
Or a sandwich, or whatever.
But they had become concerned that no one was at the shop, and they assumed that the nice Mr. Brennan had left without telling anybody. After 3 weeks, the corpse started to smell.
Yeah.
And after a month, the smell was so overwhelming that neighbors called the health department, who in turn called the police to break the door in. The smell in the shop was hideous, and that led to the rotting body of Hackett. The corpse was so badly decomposed and mauled by rats that it was impossible to identify, and the only thing the coroner could determine was that it was a male about 40 years old, the same age as the missing Brennan.
Right. So he's gone. They find this body under his door, so you naturally think it's him.
At this stage, police assumed it was the body of the missing shop proprietor, who had crawled under his shop for reasons known only to himself and electrocuted himself. Sure.
If you ever find me under this building, if you ever find me under this building, know that I didn't go there by myself.
Well, that's like I saw a meme on Facebook that said, if you ever find me dead on a jogging trail, it wasn't a heart attack.
My body's been moved.
Yeah, my body's been moved.
Let's see. It looked like they had no reason to suspect foul play. Everything was normal. It looked like an accidental death. The body was buried in a pauper's grave under the name of Alan Edward Brennan. Had William McDonald stayed away from Sydney, he'd have gotten away with five murders. Unaware that he was supposedly dead and buried, McDonald stayed a short time in Brisbane before going to New Zealand, still in the belief that the police would be looking for him. But his urge to kill was still with him, and he was getting stronger every day.
He just couldn't leave well enough alone. Mm-hmm.
He had to kill again, and for reasons known only to him, he had to return to Sydney to do it.
He had to cut off another penis.
One of McDonald's old
it's like co-workers... It's a Lay's potato chip.
You can't have just
A Pringles, yeah.
You can't just have one. Just
one. Right. One of McDonald's old co-workers, John McCarthy, bumped head-on into the dead Brennan as he was walking down a crowded George Street in the heart of Sydney.
Well, I bet he was beside himself.
He nearly died of shock and had no idea that the murdered Hackett had been buried as the missing Brennan. McDonald was surprised when his old friend was so stunned to see him. "You're supposed to be dead," he told McDonald. "What do you mean? I don't understand why we have... there's dialogue here. Like, did somebody record this? They found your body underneath your shop at Burwood. We went to your funeral service, but if you're alive, who's the body under the shop? And why did you run away?"
That's a fair question.
Fair question. And you son of a bitch, you owe me $14 to I send flowers.
Never mind that. Here's the thing. Do you ask that to the person that's standing there in front of you? Like, that should be an internal wonderment.
That's an internal dialogue.
That's an internal dialogue. Like, you don't just ask
Well, and then once you put that out there...
You take the fuck off.
Or, get the hell out of Dodge. If you're the mutilator, there's your next victim.
Well, clearly. So, it dawned on McDonald what had happened, and he ran down the street.
See, you don't just run down the street. When someone throws that out there...
God, hell, I don't know who was under there. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I went to visit my sister. That night, he was on the midnight train to Melbourne.
He's leaving.
On the midnight train to Melbourne.
John He'd rather live in his world.
Then there were not a penis in mine.
John McCarthy went to the police, but they didn't believe him. And he told him he had just had a drink with a dead man. Death Sergeant told him to go home and sleep it off.
See, so many times we do these stories where people go to report this.
I know.
The cops ignore them.
Death Sergeant didn't believe him the following day when he went back and told him the same story. They said he was crazy, and in desperation, John McCarthy rang the Daily Mirror and spoke to a renowned crime reporter, Joe Morris.
Joe Morris?
He's on your side.
You got Joe Morris?
He's Joe Morris.
Yeah. He's renowned.
He's renowned,
He's a dog with a bone, dude.
Get John Morris on the case.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Shit, on a fucking roll.
Oh, well. He took up the story and published The Tale of the Walking Corpse. This put pressure on the police further, and they exhumed the remains and fingerprint the guy before they buried him?
No, they did a crappy job. They just
Jesus Louise.
They did a half-assed job on the autopsy.
Okay, so the police finally felt like they were on to the mutilator. John McCarthy supplied an extremely lifelike description of the missing Brennan. Why wouldn't it be lifelike? I'm serious.
Well, they didn't have a photo of him, so he had to tell them, and they did
a sketch artist.
They did a sketch, right.
Okay. What the hell ever. And it was circulated on the front page of every paper across the nation. Meanwhile, William McDonald had taken a job on the railways in Melbourne. And even though he dyed his hair and had a light mustache, there was no mistaking that he was the missing Brennan.
Yeah, he was like on Australia's Most Wanted or something. Yeah.
Well, and his new co-workers were on him like a hobo on a ham sandwich. And
a penis on a vagrant.
And he asked the station master for his pay for the 3 days he'd worked, the police swooped in on the meek and mild-mannered little man who had brought Australia's biggest city to its knees and took him to Russell Street
to my knees twice.
Questioning. William McDonald didn't oppose his extradition to Sydney to face murder charges, and a crowd was at Sydney Airport to greet the two detectives who did jack shit.
Yeah.
And get the first glimpse of Australia's most grotesque and notorious serial killer. They were to be disappointed. The thin, short, shy McDonald was nothing like the beast they'd imagined.
Need to be that big to cut off a tallywhacker.
No,
well,
you don't.
And he confessed.
It doesn't take much.
He was charged with 4 counts of murder. He pled not guilty on the grounds of insanity. His trial was held in September of 1963 and was one of the most sensational the country had ever seen. And the public hung on to every word of horror that fell out of the mutilator's mouth. When he testified how he stabbed one of his victims in the neck 30 times and then removed the man's testicles and penis with the same knife, a woman in the jury fainted. She got the vapors. Judge McLennan stopped the proceedings and excused this juror from the rest of the grisly evidence. He then ordered.
Did they bring in the penises to show as evidence?
I don't know if they had them. They should have been preserved in Ziploc bags because that shit will preserve just about anything.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been better if you had a food saver.
A vacuum sealer.
Food saver. That would have been better.
Oh yeah, you can save space that way too.
You can. You provide
seven or eight.
I love my food saver. Yeah. So McDonald went into great detail about his crimes, and it didn't take long to find him guilty of four counts of murder. As everyone thought
he confessed, I guess it didn't take long.
I don't even know why there was a trial.
I did it.
I did it, and this is how. And then I just got tired.
They only got him for four counts, even though he killed five people. But
So before, let's see. Everybody thought that the mutilator was crazy. There was yet another sensation when the jury chose not to go with public opinion and found him to have been sane at the time of the murders. Before passing sentence, Mr. Justice McLennan said it was the most barbaric case of murder and total disregard for human life that had come before him.
And penises, yeah.
Yeah, in his many years on the bench. William McDonald had shown no signs of remorse and had made it quite clear that if he were free, he'd go on killing. Yeah. Man, as often as his urges came along.
You do not want to share a jail cell.
No, he needs to be alone. He needs a spork. Give this man a spork. I don't want him having a fork.
A spork? Deadly. you can kill a bitch with a spork. And scoop out the junk.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's see. He was sentenced to life in prison, and his papers were marked likely to offend again. Yeah, because he told you he would.
Because he told you he would.
Shortly after his incarceration, he bashed another prisoner to death with a slops bucket, and Long Bay jailers result.
It's hard to get, knives in prison.
Yeah.
What the fuck's a slops bucket?
Anyway, well, I guess it's like a mop bucket.
Mop, but those big metal buckets.
Those are sweet.
Bing.
And
motherfucker.
And as a result of that, he was declared insane by a panel of doctors. He spent the next 16 years at the Morissette Psychiatric Center for the Criminally Insane. Is that like Arkham Asylum? Because that's sweet.
Yeah.
On the New South Wales coast. In 1980, William McDonald was found sane enough to be released back into the mainstream prison society and has since been in the protective custody of the Cessnock Prison, about a two-hour drive northwest from Sydney. He requested to live in this section of the jail because it was quieter and he wouldn't be disturbed by, the prison riffraff.
Yeah. He was, wasn't he in the same asylum, a roommate with Mr. Freeze?
Harley Quinn? Yeah, the Joker.
Apparently he was, in his later years before he died, he was, this old, he was really institutionalized and, he was this very... innocent type of prisoner, he didn't cut anyone's junk
till he took somebody's junk off with a
plastic
sword.
But if they would have given him a knife, it would have
kind of calmed down later on.
So here he lived a reclusive existence, reading and listening to classical music, and became known as Old Bill. Oh, good Old Bill.
Good old Bill.
He used to cut off dicks, but now he's a cool guy.
Yeah, and just listen to classical music. Had he done that before, he would probably been okay.
Yeah.
Should have picked up that hobby a little bit before.
William McDonald, the mutilator, died on April 12th, 2015, a month before our birthday.
Hasn't even been a year yet.
No. Was 90. He died while he was still imprisoned, and at the time of his death, he was the oldest and longest served prisoner in the custody of Australia.
I wonder if they cut his dick off after he died.
I wouldn't think so.
And put it in a Ziploc baggie for preservation.
Throw it in a harbor.
Yeah.
No, because now we have food savers, so they just vacuum pack that shit.
I got 48 comforters. It's sucked down to the size of a
like
sandwich.
A nickel. Yeah. Oh, I know. I love that shit.
So, Brandy, what's your final thoughts on William McDonald, the mutilator? She liked it,
it's the giggles every time she hears of a penis being cut off.
I do. I just love the fact that he kept transferring baggies. like this one got this was gross. I'm going to transfer it over here before I throw it in the river.
Raincoats and baggies and knives.
I'm telling you, he should have shopped at Costco for those baggies. Yeah. That would have been his best bet.
Colonel, what's your thought on the mutilator?
I'm opposed to involuntary junk removal, Timmy.
You're not a big fan of castration?
1-800-GOT-JUNK?
You guys. You laugh, but if you had a loved one who had their junk cut off, it wouldn't be so funny.
Well, as long as it wasn't me.
Yeah, but I didn't, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Brandy, where can people find us?
You can find us on the iTunes.
We're on the iTunes. Please leave us a review.
And we're on Facebook. And I love Facebook comments. They make me happy. And we are on Stitcher and Libsyn. And where else are we? And not YouTube, because Chuck sucks and we don't have all this time. We are on the Twitter.
At HistoryDweebs1.
Yes. And Chuck sucks because he's supposed to have... I've been all this time waiting infirmed.
I believe he said the first of the year.
Been infirmed.
I did not specify the year to me.
I mean, you couldn't even on my deathbed.
Would you quit?
Okay, in all seriousness, Colonel.
On my deathbed, you couldn't even get the YouTube channel going.
I didn't have great hopes for that. But when he promised Brittany Nicole that he would send her an autographed
prescription. You know what? I have been... It's sitting at Walgreens. It got printed. I got to pick it up.
You promised her that. You got
his herpes are taking up a lot of his time.
I know, but Brittany Nicole, I'm sorry that the thing bad here...
She's on Team Brandy.
Still, you promised her.
It'll get out this week, Timmy.
Okay. Brittany Nicole, I'll talk to my people. If you don't, you let us know.
Make sure you get the YouTube channel.
Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you all again real soon next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.